Welcome to Interparty Conflict, the podcast where we answer your questions so you can have the best tabletop gaming experience possible. My name is Gabe.
My name is Jeff.
And we're going to answer your questions today. But first, I have a question. Jeff.
Yeah.
How are you doing today?
Oh, doing okay. We're recording this on a Friday, so got just done with my week at work, which was somewhat exhausting. My manager has been out most of the week because his wife just had a baby.
Okay.
So it's just, you know, like, you know, like when I feel like we've had a couple people call off at some point this week or something. I don't know. We've just been kind of short staffed and things are getting a little hectic when the manager's not around.
Sure.
Cause like there's a lot of stuff that has to go, not necessarily through him, but through like the owners, but like he's our connection to the owners. So it's like,
sure.
You know, it's like there's a lot of things we kind of had to kind of figure out on our own or try and get a hold of the owners, which, like, you know, they're hard to get a hold of no matter what. So I don't know. But beyond that, I got my sister coming into town this weekend with my nieces. They get to meet my dog for the first time. And I just spent the last like hour making cookies for when they get here.
Ooh. So, and listeners, I can vouch Jeff's cookies are amazing.
Yeah, they're pretty dope. If to toot my own horn, I like them a lot. So I mean, who doesn't like cookies? Come on.
Yeah.
But so what's going on, Gabe? How you doing?
Oh boy. So, listeners, I just want to take a little sidebar here and say, hopefully, over the next 3 months or 3.5 months, whatever. Before the show ends, hopefully not every episode or every other episode or whatever is going to be me complaining about my job. And it's not even really it's sort of a complaint. I'm not here to complain today. I'm here to just express my bafflement.
Okay.
So today, the day that we're recording this, mm-hmm. on a Friday, they sent us home 20 minutes into the shift. Apparently, there is some sort of, not to get into specifics about my job, but there's some part that we need that they are running low on, you know, as they've been running low on lots of parts forever, which makes it so confusing as to why they announced that critical status thing, which is supposed to take effect next week. So they're out of a part. So they sent us home. They gave us the option we could either stay and clean or go home. I, of course, chose to go home. And apparently the people that did stay to clean, they sent them home after like 2 hours. But I got word from one of my coworkers, one of my work friends, sent me a message saying that there is strong evidence that they may lay us off for a week because of this part. Apparently with a lot of the parts, we can still go on with production without those parts, and they'll just put the parts in when we get them.
Right.
With this particular part, apparently the manufacturer of that part told them, hey, if you do that and something goes wrong, it's not covered anymore. We're not covering it under, you know, our agreement or whatever. And
sure.
So the people in charge were like, whoa, okay, hold up. Let's not put those parts in. So, I mean, we might not. No official word has been given, but it's possible. We'll see. It's so baffling because, again, in a week, we are supposed to be going into critical status, which is when they will most likely start making us work additional hours, potentially seven days a week until the end of the year. And I don't get it. Don't get it one bit.
Well, here's my thought on it.
Yeah.
Well, one, it's like, you know, the extended hours is happening a little bit later. And so like maybe the idea is like, okay, once we get these parts in, then we'll be able to make up for lost time.
Yeah.
And then also it could be that because they know there are going to be times here and there where they're going to be out of parts and they can't be functional all the time, they just want to make sure everybody's available.
Sure.
And by available, they mean forced to be available.
Yeah, of course.
So like you are all scheduled 7 days a week so that no matter when they get the parts, they can get you to be working all that day. You know,
yeah.
They want to make sure that they have full staff ready to go when the parts come up. So they're just making you... they're just making you be scheduled for every single day.
Sure.
You know, This is why unions are important. And I know you're part of a union, but that doesn't always, it's not always going to help, but it is still important.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm waiting to see what happens. Listeners, unfortunately, this isn't going to be affecting the podcast in any positive way, even if we are laid off for another week. Right. Doesn't mean that anything is going to change, except that now I have to go a week wondering what I'm supposed to be doing with my time.
Right.
So anyway, in lighter news, we will be in a couple days. We're going to be recording our final Roll 20 game for our Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And because this episode's going out after that, Jeff, let me tell you what I have planned.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
So the party is in a town of one of the towns that we created during the making of the world. Is this town where the town is called Welcome. Everybody is welcome. You're not allowed to be aggressive against anybody while you're there. It's basically just a big community run by a goddess who, there's food for everybody. There is, there's work to be done, but it's all reasonable work, and everybody pitches in order to, get by and everything. They just killed a deity, an avatar of a deity, at least, because there was another god who was... couldn't go into the town, because if he went into the town, he couldn't be aggressive. So instead, he just parked like an army outside the town and stopped anybody coming and going. So the party went and they fought him last time, defeated him. And then we were going to, before I got the news about my job, we were going to be going on to, with the goddess's help that they just ate. They just aided this goddess. So she was going to help them go do this other thing. Instead, I talked to the patrons and we decided, rather than start another bit of the overarching plot, we're just kind of going to leave it on a high note. And I am still going to run a game this coming Sunday, but it's going to be a bit more lighthearted. It's not going to be, anything crucial to the plot. It's basically going to be like, let's just goof around as our characters, So the idea that I had, and I had a basic idea for this, and then Stiltskin Koopa 84, one of my coworkers, recommended another idea that was very similar, and so I'm incorporating part of that into this. So the idea, I have a few little fun things I want planned, but the main thing is the party, they get up one day and everybody in town is like putting on war paint. They're like strapping on armor or something. They're like getting ready for something big. And it turns out it's pizza day.
What?
But when they make pizza in this town, they make one gigantic pizza.
Uh-huh.
And so everybody has to settle what toppings are going to be on that pizza. And so there's going to be factions that rise up and then compete so that the winning faction's toppings get to be on the pizza.
Uh-huh.
Everybody wants to fight against the pineapple group. Nobody wants the pineapple group to win.
Dude, put me in the pineapple group.
So... I've come up with like some various like contests and games and such that they can play in order to determine who wins the toppings, and then they'll decide the toppings, they'll go and make the pizza. However, one little wrinkle, at some point the players will notice that the goddess that sort of watches over the town and does most of like the work and everything, she's sick. When they killed the deity last time, it had sort of like ripple effects to the other gods. And it's nothing major, but for the time being, she's sick. She's not really taking part in anything. What they don't realize, at least not until later in the adventure, is that one of the side effects of that sickness is that the ban on like combat, the ban on violence in town is temporarily lifted.
Ooh.
And that's going to be important because when the giant pizza gets made, something goes horribly wrong.
Uh-huh.
Do you see where this is going, Jeff?
I think so.
A giant magical pizza comes out of the oven in the form of a calzone golem.
Oh no, not the calzone golems.
So after all of the competition is over, a group of heroic warriors will have to rise up and fight this abomination of crust and cheese and tomato sauce.
Well, were you talking about all the factions and the different toppings, I thought you were going to have like a big battle royale thing going on or something.
Well, so I want to make it sound like it's going to be a battle royale, but then it's going to be like, tug of war and I don't know. whatever sure. the heck, stuff like that, you know.
Sure. I'd actually be on the anchovy faction.
Okay. I'll make sure to. I'll make note of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. I do want to give everybody a good send-off, but I did ask them, like, do you want to keep on going with the main story, knowing we won't be able to actually finish it, or do we want to just leave on a high note and then do something goofy, you know? So.
Sure, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited for that. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Cool. Sounds great. Sounds great.
All right. You want to go ahead and get into this episode?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, Jeff, I want you to imagine you're on an Arctic submarine expedition.
Ooh, okay.
And they've got an apparatus of Qualish for you to pilot around. It's like attached to the boat, and they'll like drop it off the boat so that you can explore underwater.
Yeah.
And so they take you, there's like this big glacier, and they want you to go, there was legend of some sort of a hidden chamber locked underneath, or hidden temple or something locked underneath this glacier. So you get down there, give me a dexterity check to see how well you can operate the controls okay. of this device.
Kind of fiddling with all the levers and things. Yes. I rolled a 19.
Okay. Well, so you, it takes you a little bit to get the hang of it, but you get the hang of it, you know, well enough. You are piloting this big crab-shaped, you know, metal mech around underneath the water. You've got your headlights on, and you're seeing, like, various deep sea creatures floating past. And then you're following the instructions they gave you, and then you come around a corner, and you see, like, a manufactured, like, a stone facade of a building underneath this glacier, and you're pretty sure you found it. So nice. You go and you pilot the apparatus of Qualish through like a passageway, and you see there's like a big spot of air. So you come out and then you pop the top on the apparatus, you poke your head out, you shine your gem of brightness over there, and you see there's a big pile of gold and diamonds and rubies and magic items. And you realize, you know that the temple, you weren't sure what the temple was to, but once you get here, you see there's all this like dragon artwork and such around the room. And then you see there's a big skeleton of what looks like maybe at one point was a silver dragon.
Ooh.
And it's laying in front of this big pile of treasure. And so you know what that big pile of treasure is, Jeff. Do you know what you just found?
What did I find, Gabe?
You just found the dragon's hoard. Today's magic item was submitted by Dustin via Discord. And this one is Blubber Balm. Are you tired of being a land animal? Does the lure of the Arctic sing to you? Do you wish you could just dive below the ice? Well, worry no more. Blubber Balm is here for you. Each tub of this magical cream is enough to cover a medium creature for 24 hours. Simply apply the balm to the skin, making sure to cover the entire surface. Within moments, the magic will take effect, granting the user resistance to cold and the ability to hold their breath for an hour at a time. So remember the jingle. When you wanna swim where the penguins go, use blubber balm and dive below.
Very good. I love it.
So pretty simple item. Yeah. You can breathe for an hour. I actually think breathing for an hour is a little low. If you've got 24 hours worth of coverage, I think you should have 24 hours worth of breathing water, you know.
I was imagining you would sprout gills or something.
Sure. Well, yeah, I guess it's sort of making you into a seal. I mean, they don't breathe water, sorry. They hold their breath for a long period of time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I
mean, you know, in any case, it's really cool. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything that makes underwater exploration a little less, like, tedious.
Yeah. It's kind of just like, you either can't do it or you can with magic. And then if you have the magic, you just don't have to worry about the breathing water part or whatever. And then it's just a bunch of skill checks.
Right. It is one of those things that is, like, either incredibly tedious or, like, just almost near impossible, or becomes trivial based on like spells and things you find. So one of the things Because I really want to do a pirate, like, island hopping adventure thing. This is something I wanted to do and tried doing a couple times.
Yeah, we sort of we did a brief something like that, like a year ago, I think.
Yeah, when we first got our hands on Pathfinder Second Edition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I was coming up with for as far as like exploring like underwater, mm-hmm. was having the party come across a diving bell.
Okay.
So for those who don't know, like, a diving bell is basically just like just picture a really large bell, like from like a belt, like an old style bell tower, like picture like the Liberty Bell, but big enough for somebody to fit inside of.
Yeah.
You know, for like a couple people to fit inside. And that is when you have a cup and you turn it upside down and then put it straight down underwater, holding it underwater, mm-hmm. there's a pocket of air inside of the cup.
Yeah.
So you would have this bell attached to the ship and you would lower it into the water and it would basically create this pocket of air underneath the bell. And it's like a weighted bell. It's like heavy and, you know, made of iron or whatever. So it'll sink even with this pocket of air.
Yeah.
But the idea is like you have a diver go down with the bell and then they get this pocket of air that they can breathe in for a little while. Like, it's not, you know, unlimited air obviously, but it's enough to, like, you know, give you a little bit of respite deep underwater so that you can be like, you know, you don't have to dive all the way down every time you want to take a breath. You would bring this pocket of air with you. And then, you know, there'd also be a way to like signal to the ship or whatever. You'd be able to like tug on the rope or chain or whatever, and they would be able to bring you back up. So like, I thought that'd be a cool tool to have like added on to the player's ship as they go on their, you know, island hopping adventure. So that like, if they want to look for, like shipwrecks or something like that, like if they find clues of a shipwreck off the coast of whatever island, they can go and check it out and see if there's like treasure or clues or something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like things like that, that like make it a lot easier to do underwater exploration, but doesn't trivialize it so much that it is basically just any old, it's like any other exploration, you know?
Sure.
But I do really like things like this where it's like a consumable is a really cool thing. Like, consumables are, you know, we've talked about consumables where it's that thing of like, you're going to want to save it just in case of a good time to use it. But really, you should just use them, because like, what's the fun in never using a thing?
Exactly. Yeah, I just think that underwater is an underused environment in D&D. And not only that, but like Arctic water, I think. I've never played a game that has taken place in underwater in the Arctic, ever.
Right, yeah. So yeah, you have to have that added extra protection of the cold.
Yeah. I've never read Rime of the Frost Maiden. Maybe there's some underwater stuff in there. But even if there is, I think that there should be more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, that's fun. It's cool.
Yeah. So as far as this item goes, I would say that maybe there should be like an upgraded version that does just give you gills for the 24 hours.
Right. Yeah.
You could have like SPF, but the F would be fish.
SPF 24.
Sea protection fish. Sea protection colon fish.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
I
you know, it's a simple item, but I thought it was fun, and I thought that the jingle would be fun as well. So.
It's a nice touch. I like it.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that's all I have to say for this one.
Yeah. That's from Dustin?
That's from Dustin, yeah.
Oh, thanks, Dustin.
So yeah, that was, once again, that was from Dustin via Discord, and that was Blubberbalm. Thank you, Dustin. Jeff, if anybody else wanted to submit magic items for the Dragon Sword, or questions for our main segment, or stories for the funeral pyre or retirement village or whatever in the last segment, how would they get those to us?
They could send us an email at innerpartyconflict@gmail.com or join us on our Innerparty Discord at bit.ly/innerpartydiscord.
That's correct. And before we go any further, we have a giveaway to give away today.
Woo!
We are giving away a copy of The Witch Class from Seawood Scribe. I should probably specify his name on DM's Guild is Nathan Hurd. H-E-A-R-D. I tried looking up this one and his ghost class on DM Scale. And I was like, why aren't they on here? It's not showing up under Seawood Scribe. It's under his real name, Nathan Hurd. So yeah, he's got the witch class, which was part of Strahd's Manual of Shadow, which we gave away to just a few people last year. So we're giving away a copy of that supplement. It's got a full class, it's got subclasses, it's got spells, lots of stuff for anyone who wants to make a witch class in 5th edition D&D. So, Jeff, who is the winner of this great little supplement today?
Today's winner is Elliot M.
Whoa, 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 winner!
Yes, congratulations, Elliot M. You should be getting that in your email pretty soon. Be sure to leave Nathan Hurd a review on this product, because Nathan, Seawood Scribe, makes great stuff, and the more reviews he gets, the more he can know to work on stuff in the future, and also the more attention he'll get on DM's Guild and so on. So please just be sure to leave a review for this product, and thank you for entering, and thank you, Nathan, for making this giveaway for us. If anyone else wants to see this kind of stuff that Seawood Scribe makes, like I said, he has a ghost class, again, which is under the name Nathan Hurd. I'll put a link in the show notes. It was in the link. It was in the show notes for last week, I think. But it's got a great little ghost class on there, and that one's free. So you can go and download that right now, see what you think. If you like it, you can enter this drawing. So, Jeff, if anybody wanted to enter this drawing and win a free copy of the witch class, how would they enter?
They can enter by sending us an email at interpartyconflict@gmail.com with Hocus Pocus in the subject line.
That's correct. And then a quick reminder, if you write us a review and send a picture of it to us at interpartyconflict@gmail.com, you can be entered into a drawing for a leather box that looks like a leather book that we're going to be doing the drawing for on October 12th. And then also a leather book cover that's going to be, the drawing is going to be on November 9th. Both of those from Maumee River Leather. So enter that drawing and check out that website and buy some leather goods because they're awesome.
Cool.
Hey everyone, Gabe here. In place of our Patreon commercial, I just wanted to record a little bit of information so that everybody knows how we're going to be dealing with the Patreon moving forward. Now, as we mentioned, although I had planned on keeping up with bonus episodes and online games until the end of the podcast at the end of this year, recent changes to my work schedule have made that impossible. As such, the top two tiers of the Patreon and their associated rewards will be ending on August 29th, just a few days from this episode's release. If you are currently in one of the top two tiers, I recommend changing your pledge down to the $1 tier, more on that in a moment, before the 29th, unless you intend to voluntarily remain at a higher tier for the time being, which won't get you anything extra, but of course will be appreciated. If you currently have any rewards that are not yet redeemed, such as having us record a custom message or a 10-minute discussion, etc., we will honor those even after the tiers have ended, but you'll need to reach out for us to that to make sure that it gets done. As for the $1 tier, I plan on making all of our Patreon content available at that tier. All of the bonus episodes, all the patron updates, etc. I also will continue to put out outtakes until the end of the year, and we already have an October bonus episode that we've already recorded, which will also be released on the $1 tier sometime next month. Once the podcast officially ends, I plan on keeping the $1 tier available for the foreseeable future. It's my intention to keep all 5 years' worth of episodes hosted on SoundCloud for as long as I can. So anyone who feels like giving us a few dollars a year would go a long way to help with hosting fees. Although I don't expect many people to do so, I am leaving the option there just in case. I may at some point in the future put updates or additional projects on the Patreon, but I hope anyone who does choose to continue to donate understands that I won't be promising any additional content after January. So again, just a reminder, if you're hearing this and you don't wish to keep supporting us at a higher tier, go reduce your tier. And of course, if you choose to cancel it altogether, no worries. Thanks for your support thus far. Please contact us if you have any unredeemed patron rewards, and most importantly, thank you to everyone who supported us over the years. The podcast would not have been what it was without you, and no matter how much or how little you gave, you are amazing, and if I ever see you in person, I owe you a handshake. So a big thank you, and enjoy the show. And then one more quick thing. Check out the other podcasts on the Crit Nation Fellowship. Check out Crit Academy, critacademy.com. Justin, Ian, and Austin create new and reusable content for players and DMs alike. Check out Brute Force and Ignorance. They're an actual play podcast on the network. That's they were on hiatus for a little while, but they are back and coming out with great stuff. And then check out D&D Character Lab and the Kind GM podcast, both of which are on indefinite hiatus as of right now. So check out all those. Enough of all the admin. Let's get into some questions, Jeff.
All right. Our first question comes from Ravel G on email, and they ask, do you think it would be possible to run a D&D campaign with no or very little combat? How would you do this?
Yeah. So quick answer, yes. It's definitely possible.
Uh-huh.
You know, some groups really, really like just pure role-playing. A lot of groups prefer games with little to no combat. That being said, I would say that most of the groups I've played with, combat is pretty common. Combat is the majority of each session.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've said several times that D&D is a war game with
it is,
you know,
it,
with
it
role
is.
Playing,
it, yeah.
You know, woven in there. So yeah, like it's one of those things where, like, yeah, you absolutely could, but there are other systems that would do better.
Yeah,
there's a lot more game systems out there that do non-combat RPG tabletop RPGs better.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely doable. And then, like, if you just like the rule sets for, like, the skill checks and things like that, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just what you're familiar with, you know, that's, it might just be easier to stick with D&D, but just skip the combat stuff.
Yeah.
But then you're also kind of skipping, like, the majority of what a character sheet has, you know?
Correct.
Yeah. Like, because a lot of what you're building in a character is the combat. You know, there is like, you know, abilities for combat. Like, there are plenty of non-combat abilities that a character has, but mm-hmm. like most of your sheet is devoted to, you know, fighting.
Most of the book is devoted to fighting, yeah. unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no reason you can't run a D&D game, even a full campaign, with no combat. If you want to do that, yeah, like I said, there's no reason you can't. There's no reason even to discourage someone from doing that. Just like what Jeff was saying, you'll just be ignoring a lot of what, you know, what the game is, I guess. When you make a character, so much of what you make in you put in your character sheet, so much of what's in your class description, so much of it is you can use this weapon, you can use this armor. You can cast these spells that do this much damage. You have this ability that reduces damage. You have this ability that increases damage. And so, yeah, you can ignore all of that stuff. But again, like Jeff was saying, there are other games that are, you know, just don't have combat mechanics. You know, some that are rules light, some that are rules heavy. I would say the only time I would discourage someone from trying to run a D&D campaign with little to no combat is really just when they try to make up for the lack of depth in the non-combat rules by coming up with other rules. So, like, in D&D, there aren't really rules for, at least not in the books, there aren't really rules for, like, a negotiation or, I don't know, like, and beyond just, like, a simple skill check. Or even a skill challenge if you're, you know, willing to look into other editions of D&D.
Yeah.
There isn't really much mechanical about role-playing. Or really just kind of about most stuff that isn't combat. Exploration, there's some rules for that. You know, solving puzzles, I guess there's some stuff for that, a little bit. But if you're the kind of person where you're like, okay, I want there to be rules for, like, a social combat or something, because I've been in groups where, yeah, they had rules for what to do if you were, like, in a debate with someone and you rolled initiative and then you would, like, make a quote unquote attack roll and you had different maneuvers you could do. And that's cool and all, but, like, that's not D&D. That's you're either taking stuff from a different game, in which case it's like, well, maybe try just playing that game. It's probably better suited for that. Or you're just coming up with stuff on your own, and that's fine. You can do that. But again, I'm just curious as to why you are playing D&D. If what you want is something that D&D spends a very, very small percentage of its page count on. You know, it is just, it's a game that a lot of us are familiar with. It's the most popular game out there, I as far as I know. It's the one that most people are familiar with. It definitely has the name recognition.
Right.
Older people probably aren't going to know Pathfinder, but they're going to know D&D. They're going to know what Dungeons and Dragons is a thing. Maybe they don't know exactly what it is. So I can understand a lot of people wanting to just use the game that they're familiar with. And again, no reason not to, but if you are looking for something that has more meat to it, that has more potential, more depth, something that isn't just a few skill checks, look into other systems. I'll see if I can find some other systems that are that have more mechanics for role-playing and put those in the show notes.
Yeah.
If I were going to run a campaign that had little to no combat, I would still want to make use of a lot of the stuff that characters are going to have. I don't think I would use D&D for a campaign that was just like political intrigue. Maybe. There would have to definitely be some like assassinations and, you know, coups and so on in order to really necessitate D&D. But like something that was, if there was like an exploration campaign, a mainly exploration campaign, I think would be a lot of fun and could definitely make good use of the D&D rule set, a lot of it anyway. I don't know. It's harder than you would think to come up with like what type of a campaign you could run using D&D that doesn't have combat or has very little combat.
Yeah. I mean, like, depends on how little you're talking. Cause like, you know, like if you're not going for full blown, you know, several round with several different enemies combats, like you can have like little spats here and there. Like you have one round between two people, you know, it's like, okay. And then whoever did the more damage that within that round won the little scuffle. Sure. And it's like, you know, if negotiations go so poorly that it comes to some blows, it's not like, okay, everybody in the room chooses sides and it goes and it's a brawl. It's more just like, okay, the two people like draw their swords and like take a slash at each other. And it's like, ooh, okay. You win. I'm good. You know?
Yeah.
So you can play more, you know, there's still combat, but people don't like all gang up on each other and fight to the death. It's more just like, okay, these two people are fighting. All right. That guy got hit pretty bad. So I think he's going to go, you know, run home with his, you know, tail between his legs kind of thing.
Sure. I guess here's something you just made me think of. If you are running a campaign that has little to no combat, is mostly role playing, leveling up is going to be kind of superfluous. You're probably going to want to let the players level up just because, they've been playing for X number of sessions. They should have some sort of progression, right?
Sure. But
if you aren't doing combat, leveling up really isn't going to do anything except make what little combat there is more of the game. Because at higher levels, it's not like more combats are over in one or two rounds. At higher levels, you're fighting bigger things. You're fighting bigger groups of things. You're fighting things with more complex abilities. And so most of what you're getting at when you level up in D&D is more hit points. You're getting more spells that deal damage. Yes, you're getting increases to your skills, and you can use those for non-combat things. But again, really just what D&D is meant to do is combat. And so leveling up really exacerbates that. So if you had like a 10th level party, so much more of your character is going to necessitate combat than when you were first level. At the very least, you'll be just as capable outside of combat as you were at first level.
Right.
Because like, you know, so much about role playing isn't stat based. Yes, there are skill checks, but I don't know, because of bounded accuracy and stuff, I feel like you are going to have a similar chance of success at higher levels as you did at lower levels in any given skill check. And so I really don't see what leveling up would give you other than just a feeling of progression.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you can run a campaign where the progression is not mechanical. The progression is, oh, now your character has a title. Now your character has servants and such, and that's cool. But again, that's not D&D. Like, that's not incorporating any of the D&D rule set into that. So at that point, you might as well be playing some other game that does use out of combat mechanics more.
Right. Yeah. Because the more you take away from D&D and add new stuff, the less it becomes D&D, which we've talked about, like house rules and stuff like that in the past. Right.
You can do that. I'm not going to tell. Sorry, some people will tell you you're doing it wrong. I'm not going to tell you you're playing D&D wrong. I just have to ask, why are you playing D&D? Why not learn some other rule set? Maybe even a rule set that has just fewer rules. D&D has so many rules,
mm-hmm.
and so many rules that, like, I'm forgetting. You're probably forgetting. Uh-huh. Imagine not having to take out a rule book for a session because everybody knows the rules because there are fewer rules. Mm-hmm. Imagine being able to explain how to play the game to a new person and not have to spend 45 minutes or more helping them make a character because you got to flip through so much of the book and then you got to choose all of these combat options for what is not going to be a combat campaign. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. It's like, it's just so hard to separate. Like, because, like, you know, the reason you'd be playing D&D is because it's like fantasy stuff. Like, it's the theme. It's sort of like, it's the feeling. It's really hard to separate fantasy from, like, you know, action and stuff. Like, that's just that, like, that as far as, like, in books and movies and television shows, it's like when you're in the fantasy genre, like, there's bound to be some, like, fighting and action.
Yeah, there's always going to be a big army fight in that fantasy movie that you're watching.
Right, yeah. There's, you know, or there's, like, they, you know, there's a hero with a sword or something. I don't know. Yeah. Like, it's just part of it. Not to say that that can't be, that you can't separate those things. It's just, it becomes something different. Yeah. There are probably much better game systems to use than D&D for something like this. But again, not impossible. It just takes a lot of work. And, you know, if you're going to put that much work into it, you might as well put the work into researching a system that does it better.
Sure. Like, one game that I don't really have a lot of experience playing, but I have a lot of experience listening to, is GURPS, the generic universal role-playing system.
Yeah.
I listened to the film Reroll. I've listened to them for a long time. And that podcast is taking movies and then turning those into role-playing games. And so they use GURPS, which is just this generic system you can use for just about anything. And so many of the movies that they have played on that podcast have no combat whatsoever. Some of them have a little bit of combat. Some of them have a lot. But, like, they did Thelma and Louise, for crying out loud. They role-played through Thelma and Louise using this other system. And just listening to that podcast, I've gotten glimpses of how it does differ from D&D in terms of, like, what your options are when you're not in combat. There are, like, different skills you can roll. There are different maneuvers you can do with those skills in order to convince someone of something. And then there are downsides you can take in order to get a better result on this check that you're making, and so on. And so much of it applies to things outside of combat that even that, just off the top of my head, seems like a game that would be better suited for a heavy role-playing campaign or a non-combat campaign than D&D, just because so much of D&D's what makes D&D D&D is just combat is just baked right in.
Mm.
So go check out GURPS, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. All right. Our next question comes from Fig number 4255. This was on Reddit, and they ask, why do you think people choose to play D&D rather than a different game with more or less restrictive rule set?
Yeah. So kind of a counterpoint or a more specific look at the previous question.
Yeah.
Why do people choose to play D&D? Like, I'm always advocating try out another system that does something that D&D doesn't really do very well. Try another system that does it even better.
Yeah. For me, it's definitely like just familiarity. Like, it's just like, I know it. I understand it. Like, I can, as much as I said, like, you know, it might be easier to just put the time into researching a new system rather than putting the time into making new rules. But sure. I feel like I do not follow that. I would not follow that advice.
Yeah.
I would actually find it more fun, maybe not easier, but more fun to try to implement new rules into D&D that achieve the goal that I have in mind.
Sure.
So like, yeah, because I have this fondness for D&D, I might be more inclined to stick with it. Like, you know, not necessarily a brand loyalty, but like just a more like a nostalgic kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, I might be more likely to just try and figure out a way to get what I want out of D&D, you know, outside the core rules.
Yeah.
That being said, I've been moving way more towards Pathfinder second edition. Like,
yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
So like you said earlier, like brand recognition is definitely a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
It just being the game that everybody already knows is a big part of it, especially if like you had an aunt or an uncle that, or your dad used to play it a long time ago. That can be enough to get you to want to play D&D, even if D&D might not be the exact experience that you find that you want. So the fact that so many people are already playing it is a big draw. Also, here's a benefit of a lot of people playing the game is that there's support. So like if you don't know how to do something, you can ask online and someone else has probably encountered that whatever situation you're in.
Mm-hmm.
They can tell you, this is what my group did. This is how I think that should be adjudicated. You can even get in touch with the creators of the game, you know, if you're lucky, on Twitter or whatever, and get a rules clarification. It's getting fairly regular errata and additional, you know, additional content, additional books and such. So that's a big draw to the game. If you want a game that is going to be evolving in the whole community as you're playing it, that can be a big draw for D&D. Also, as far as how complex the game is, I would actually say 5th edition D&D specifically is kind of in a little sweet spot. Some games are too rules light that when I try to play them, I just don't know what I'm doing. I don't really do well in a game that is pure narration. I'm trying to get better at that. That's why I like running games like the Terrible RPG or whatever, because I want to get better at improvising and I want to get better at just being in a game that is entirely role-playing. So some games are just a little bit too rules light for me. But then also, D&D 5th edition, again, 5th edition specifically, is less complex than, say, Pathfinder. Pathfinder is great. You can do so much great stuff in Pathfinder, but there's more stuff you got to know in order to make full use of your character. 5th edition D&D is, you know, it's still on the upper side of complexity, but I think that it at least looks welcoming enough to someone who doesn't know the game at all. It looks less intimidating than a game like Pathfinder. Even it looks less intimidating than earlier editions of D&D. 3rd edition and 4th edition D&D look a lot more complex than 5th edition does. So that's one way they can kind of lure you in. There is a bit of complexity in there. So maybe you'll get in and realize, oh, this isn't what I thought it was. But, you know, it's easy to like lure people in with 5th edition D&D.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, it is so iconic, and all of the artwork is so iconic. It's got so much history that people associate with fantasy that if you are going to be playing a fantasy game specifically, I feel like it's the natural choice to go with D&D. If you want something sci-fi, you know, maybe there's like Star Wars RPG and so on and so on. If you want something that has a different setting than fantasy, then yeah, you could try out something else. But like if you just want, I want to do a Lord of the Rings style game. I want to do a Willow style game. I want to do a, you know, maybe you know what Dragonlance is. Oh, Dragonlance, you could do that in D&D. So a lot of what people associate with fantasy, D&D has, you know, has the patent on, I guess.
Right.
They've got that They've got your attention, and it's really easy to just lure people in with D&D.
Mm-hmm. Same with the what we were saying earlier about, you know, there's a lot more people who play D&D, so it's easier to get help on certain things. Like, there's, if you want to change it into a different game, somebody's basically probably already done that for you. You just go in the DM's Guild or whatever. Yeah, you're right with 5th edition. Like, it is a good entry point.
Yeah.
Just because it is sort of like, there's plenty of rules, so you can do deep dives and like you can get real down and dirty with rules, but like it's not required. To get through a session, like you don't have to get too crazy with the rules. Like, you can just go, you know, like, you know, you just got to know about rolling a d20. Sometimes you have advantage, sometimes you have a disadvantage, and that's basically it, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. Even something like in Pathfinder, the way that actions work is more complex, and I like how complex it is.
Yeah,
but I could definitely see someone just being completely confused by, wait, so I have 3 actions and this thing takes 2 actions.
Right.
And I have this reaction, but I can only use the reaction if I took this action on my turn to set it up, and so on and so on. You know, there is some of that in D&D too, but I think it's a little bit more hidden. It's not quite as right in your face that's how it works. So it's easier to just coast by without, maybe you're not using all of your abilities, but you don't feel like you're missing out as much as you would with Pathfinder, I think.
Right, yeah. It's less... Yeah, there's less of that, like, oh, crap, I have an action left. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do with it? It's more just like, I attack. All right, cool.
Yeah, that's my turn.
That's my turn. Although, you know, as more experienced, I'm like, oh, man, that's all I got to do, huh? I attacked and missed. Woo! Whereas in, you know, Pathfinder, it's like, okay, I can attack 3 times on level 1. Yeah, my odds go down every attack, but at least I get that extra chance of getting a 20. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, okay, I can attack once. Ooh, do I want to attack a second time? Sure, I'll attack a second time. Okay, now with my 3rd action, I can attack, or I can raise my shield, in which case I can use my reaction to block damage. But if I block damage, then the shield takes damage and I take damage and so on and so on. And yeah. So it's, D&D, I think, is, although it is a lot more complex than it could be, I think that they've done at least well enough with like the presentation that it doesn't really feel that complex, which is why I think a lot of people don't think of it as being as complex as it is.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, it's just D&D. Everybody knows D&D.
Right, yep. It always comes back to that name recognition. Like, that's just, like, that's what most people are going to know about.
Yeah.
So that's what people, like, even when, like, somebody who knows nothing about D&D more than likely has heard about D&D, and if they want to learn about D&D, they already know the name. They can Google Dungeons and Dragons, you know, just plug that into YouTube and you've got thousands of introduction videos, you know? Whereas, like, if you want to try out this obscure non-combat tabletop fantasy RPG, you know, you'd be lucky to find one video online about it.
Right.
And you find it and it's like the audio is terrible and you don't like the person who's talking about it. And they go on tangents about a bunch of other weird stuff. Like, it's
going
like
on tangents. Who does that?
I don't know. Some just unprofessional hacks, you know?
Yeah. That reminds me of this one time that I was, sorry, go on.
No, it's just, yeah, like it is just like, you're gonna find way more about D&D online. And so like, if you want to get into it, if you want to try it, that's, you know, like, it's a lot easier to become proficient in D&D than anything else. So
sure. And if, like, you're looking for a group, holy crap.
Yeah.
Try to find a group online or in person that's like, oh man, I'm really excited to play the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles RPG.
Right.
Maybe there's a group out there. You could probably convince someone that you know to play it with you. But if you're looking for a D&D group, you can find a group of people online or whatever that are like, oh yeah, I know the game already and I've got characters made, let's play. Whereas with, you know, other more obscure RPGs, then it's like, well, do you know the game? No. Are you willing to learn? Yes. Okay. Let's sit down. Let's learn how to do this. Let's, you know,
yeah,
make characters and so on. So,
right. Yeah.
It being the most popular game really is a benefit. You know, maybe it's circular logic. It's good because it's popular. It's popular because it's good and so on and so on. Who knows how it all began, but, you know, a lot of people are going to play just because it is popular.
Yep. All right. Our next question comes from Zourish9. I think that's what I'm reading.
Yeah, sure.
This is on Reddit, and they ask, are dungeons obsolete or no longer used in your game sessions? Why or why not?
Yeah. So speaking of Dungeons and Dragons and things that make D&D D&D, dungeons are in the freaking name.
Right.
But how often are you actually in a dungeon or anything that could be called a dungeon?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's less, it's not as common. Like it's not as like assured that you're going to be going into a dungeon every session or you're going to be, you know, in a dungeon every session. A lot of it takes place just it's like, you know, yeah, it could be like more political intrigue, you know, sort of like you're spending time in a city or in a forest or jungle or something like that. Like there, you know, there's plenty of locations to go to, but like, yeah, dungeons are sort of like the, you know, the classic like quintessential setting for an adventure.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I go into dungeons pretty regularly, I'd say.
Yeah. Like I feel like sometimes, but definitely not as I feel like I used to go into dungeons more. Like dungeon crawls.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like used to be more common. They still exist.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know, like even in our Roll20 games, most of the time, I don't really have a dungeon planned. I just have, okay, well, there's going to be this event, and this event, and this event. And then when I do run dungeons, they're not usually very good because I'm not great at making dungeons.
Right, yeah.
So, I don't know.
I think, I don't know. I want to say maybe it's sort of the moving away from things like Tomb of Horrors where it was save or die.
Okay.
Because a lot of what a dungeon is traps.
That's definitely true.
Traps and monsters and trapped rooms with monsters. You know, it's like
secret doors, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Secret doors. Yeah. Like, you know, and that can get tedious because like, you know, you're going one square at a time down a hallway thinking that every single square can be a trap. And then, you know, it's like, it takes you an hour just to get into a room with a monster. And then it takes an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours to go through combat. So like, I feel like dungeons are more tedious.
Yeah.
And it's not, and they're, and like, it's not, you can't really take a break in a dungeon.
True. True.
So yeah, I think, I mean, like if they call it a dungeon crawl,
right? Yeah, you do kind of crawl slowly.
You slowly make your way through the dungeon. So it is a big undertaking to go through a dungeon. So I feel like, you know, maybe instead of doing a campaign because you know you're not going to get a schedule, you know, together to get people together once a week,
sure,
but you know, you got a long weekend or everybody's got a week off or something. Let's run a dungeon.
Yeah.
But I think your typical campaigns now don't focus dungeons anymore. Like you might come across a dungeon or like a crypt, you know, where it's more like half a dozen rooms at best.
Right.
With, you know, a few traps, a few secret doors, and then some treasure and a monster at the end or something.
So when Zourish9 submitted this question, they kind of said that they had noticed that, like, dungeons are really popular in games, in video games.
Yeah.
And that's definitely true. And I wonder if... Well, so they were kind of asking, like, is it possible that we don't use dungeons in D&D anymore because we use them in games and they work better in games? Because I really do think they work better in games. because in D&D, it's kind of boring to have the entire party being like, okay, we go into the next room. Everybody looks amongst each other. Okay, is there anything you're going to do? Anything you're going to do? Anything you're going to do? No. Okay, we go to the next room. Is there anything you're going to do? Anything you're going to do? Anything you're going to do? And so on. Whereas if you're just playing a single player game, you can take however long you want. You know, you can just, you can go at your own pace. You can be as in-depth or as not in-depth as you want. And I think, I do feel like it is easier to go through a dungeon by yourself rather than with a bunch of other players.
Yeah.
Like with you know, if not, I'm not talking about like one PC going through a dungeon. I'm talking about one player going through a dungeon.
Right.
So Zaurish was kind of asking like, is it possible that we don't use them in D&D because we use them better in games, or is it something else? And that just kind of makes me wonder, like, are dungeons just kind of a relic of back before people really knew how best to use narrative games and social interactive games?
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe they didn't really know at first how to use this medium. And so it's like, well, I mean, I guess, sure, let's all of us just go through like a crypt or something.
Wait.
And then maybe just over time, similar to how, I don't know, I feel like thieves used to be a much bigger thing in D&D, and they're not anymore, or not as much anymore,
because right
now people understand if you're a thief and you steal from the party, you suck.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if in a similar way, we've kind of moved away from dungeons because it's just, it doesn't quite fit the medium as well as everybody thought it did.
Sure. I'm actually trying to wonder, like, where did dungeons come from? Like, did Gary Gygax like have a thing for dungeons, or was there a book or something he was really into that got him into, like,
yeah, I don't know.
I'm sure there's probably some specific like book series or something that he was just super into that was like, yeah, I want this. Cause it didn't just start off as like a normal war game.
Yeah. So it was a war game. And then I think Dave Arneson had the idea to, hey, what if instead of playing as armies, we play as individual people?
Sure.
And then they came up with adventures for these individual people to go on. I'll try to do some research actually and see if I can find where did dungeons come from?
Yeah. Well, like what's the obsession with dungeons, at least in like the idea of like a fantasy? Like, it's like, oh yeah, I'm a knight going through a dungeon to fight a dragon, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then kind of to tie this in with the previous two questions, like, or specifically the first question, I really feel like dungeons are a relic of the time when it was just a combat game.
Yeah.
Because there's usually relatively little role playing to be done in a dungeon.
Right.
There might be like an NPC or a big bad that you can talk to, but most of the time it's just combat. Because I was thinking like board games have dungeons all the time. Like, you know, there was a TSR made board game that was one of the first fantasy things that I ever played, and it was called Dungeon, and it was just a bunch of rooms. Each room had a monster in it, and you just went from room to room fighting monsters to get enough treasure to win the game.
Yeah.
And like, that is what I feel like a lot of D&D was back in the day. I didn't play back then, but the impression I've gotten is that was not uncommon.
Yeah.
Mm. Shoot, and we should have led with this question. This is a meaty question.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and like, not to say that I don't enjoy dungeons. I love dungeons. I love a good dungeon crawl.
I also love a good dungeon. When you said crypt, that made me realize I don't know when the last time I went through a crypt was. I want to go through another crypt.
Yeah, great. Yeah, like, that's like, you know, dungeons are fun. Like, you know, and because, like, I don't know. I feel like a good dungeon is just like one big puzzle.
Yeah.
And you know, there's going to be tests of strength and for combat and like, or you know, test of wits for traps or something. I don't know, but like, you know, like I dungeons are great. I love dungeons. A good well-designed dungeon is a lot of fun.
100%.
But it's not really the game as much anymore. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know.
Do we call it something different now?
Well, because I was just thinking, like, you know, I'm a big advocate of the five room dungeon, which is just kind of like a really simple framework for how you can build a dungeon or build an encounter or build a session or a campaign or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And if you're not going to call a dungeon, because, you know, I always make clear that it doesn't have to be a dungeon. It can be just about anything. But what do you call it then? If it's not the five room dungeon, what do you call it? Just a five room framework, a five room session?
The five step adventure.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's actually pretty good.
Five step program to, yeah, or like the I don't know, like yeah, five steps to becoming a hero or something. I don't know.
Yeah. If anybody does want to hear exactly a better rundown of what the five room dungeon is, episode 104 was all about that.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, what would you call Dungeons and Dragons if you had to take the dungeon out?
I mean, sword and sorcery is already taken. Yeah. I guess as the genre rather than the game.
Dragon Dice is already taken.
Dragon Dice is already taken. It is also a good game, but completely different.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we should revisit this question at some point, because like now I want to think about that, but I did not quite think about how thought provoking this question was going to be when I got this episode together.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's like, yeah. I don't think dungeons are obsolete.
Yeah. I don't either. But I do, now that I really think about it, there aren't as many of them.
Right. Yeah. Like there's so much more to the game that I feel like it's sort of in the same way where it's like running a campaign with no combat. If you're running a campaign that is just a dungeon, you're leaving out a good chunk of the game.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when you go into a dungeon, you leave behind a good, I don't know, maybe third of the game at most, I'd say.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
But you know, that's still a good chunk of the game.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure there are players who, when it's a no combat session, they go, ugh. But then I'm sure there are plenty of players that when it's a dungeon delving session, they're like, ugh.
Yeah.
So.
I've been in that mood before. I'll own up to that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's like, it's, you know, you, yeah. There comes a time when you just wanna you just wanna kick down some doors and, you know, disarm traps and kill monsters. And
sure,
there's times when you just wanna get some good role play in.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. Hey, listeners, let us know. What if you think the dungeons are as common or obsolete?
Right,
if
their
dungeons are as common as they used to be. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, let us know if you think dungeons are obsolete, and if you think so, what would you call the game? What would you rename Dungeons?
That
and Dragons?
Should have been the that should be a social media question this week. It's not. It's something similar, but
okay.
I don't
know. Yeah.
Yeah, a little maybe bonus. Little bonus social media question. What would you call D&D if there weren't dungeons?
Right.
All right. I think that'll do it for our regular questions for today. We do still have our social media questions. Our last social media question was, have you ever heard or told any in-universe ghost stories?
So yeah, you had reminded me that there was like, it was like a children's story.
Yes.
It was like a children's cautionary tale kind of thing.
But yeah, I found that.
Oh yeah. Did you send it to me?
I think I sent you a link to it. I think so. I had an idea when we were recording that episode. I said like, ooh, that gave me an idea for our Halloween, you know, our regular Halloween episode. And then I promptly forgot what that idea was. Listening back now, I think the idea was like we could come up with some D&D horror story, like D&D ghost stories.
Okay.
I don't know if that's what we're going to do or not, so the listeners don't get too excited, but
right,
maybe
yeah.
if so, I'll bring that one in. And
yeah, I don't think I have the talent for coming up with ghost stories, but
sure. I'll see if I can come up with some. We'll workshop some stuff.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
But yeah, so I wrote a campfire story for you to read in a future session, but we unfortunately didn't end up getting to that session. And then other than that, I can't really think of any that I've encountered in a game. So I don't know. I don't think many of our listeners did either, because we didn't get any on Facebook, which is kind of surprising. Didn't get any on Reddit. We got a couple on Twitter. Med School Dad, which is Dustin, says, when playing my Master of the Mask Rogue in 3.5, I had a different personality for each mask. It became untenable to properly play that many people, so I had one personality kill off the rest, identity style, and take over. He became a shadow assassin and gained a shadow minion. The other players knew about this, but their characters did not. We also happened to be in a haunted dungeon. Man, I want to play in a haunted dungeon. Not just a dungeon. Not a just haunted. A haunted dungeon.
Anyway. Like a haunted crypt.
Yes. So our archer saw a shadow hover around my sleeping body and slide in. She freaked out, woke the party. The party awoke to her holding me at bow point, babbling about ghosts. I had to convince her that the dungeon was playing tricks on her eyes and that everyone was fine. She was super jumpy after that. Eventually, I had to come clean, but for that time, it was all just spooks.
Spooks.
So yeah, I think that can, you know, that's a suitable ghost story of someone being, you know, filled with a ghost and someone else in the party realizes it and nobody else believes them.
Sure.
The DM's counsel says, I created a bard in both 3.5 and 5th editions for this exact purpose. Based on either dice rolls or payment from the party, he would weave a tale to enthrall patrons. This was also a great avenue to drop story hooks or just have a good time. Some tales were retellings of classics with in-world references. Others were original creations of my own. And that's great. Yeah, if you want to take, I mean, the story that I came up with, for whenever it does end up on the podcast at some point, is kind of inspired by like the Pied Piper sort of, in a way. So like if you can take something that exists and then just kind of twist it around and fit it into the world, go for it. That's an awesome way to get out lore and plot hooks.
Mm-hmm.
And in our campaign, it was going to be because, the party had basically a list of plot hooks. And this was one of them. It was a name on this list, and there was the name of, like, this character from a fairy tale. You know, what's that on there for? With the player, you know, the players or characters not realizing that fairy tale was based on a real spellcaster that is still out there somewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then we just got a couple of responses on Discord. Floofy Shoob says, no, but I suddenly want to make a character named Bob Ayaga. Pretty good. Wolfpack Nate says, can't say that I have, but this gives me some inspiration to put a few in my homebrew campaign if I ever get to run it. Stiltskin Koopa 84 says, yeah, it was a story about a ghost ship that we just happened to wake up to in the middle of that very same night's rest. So that's cool. So they heard the ghost story about the ship and then ran into the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Deborah Soar, probably in response to that, says, I like using the Pirates of the Caribbean style approach. And it's a two-image picture of Captain Barbossa saying, you best start believing in ghost stories, Miss Turner. You're in one, as he turns into a skeleton.
Right, yeah.
And then the Beverage Tea says, kind of. In the trial run of Waterdeep 99, the squad was called out to the Copper Cup to meet a couple of concerned guests, a perturbed owner, and three ginger dwarf staff members who were absolutely terrified out of their wits about incorporeal whispers and the clinking of teacups. One of the staff swore up and down that it was her dead gran having tea and chastising her. Two of the guests confirmed the whispers and witnessed a vase come crashing to the floor when no one else was around. A third guest confirmed that both rooms on the side of the hall were completely empty, and that is where the investigation began. So yeah, a ghost story could be the lead into the adventure. They hear this ghost story, they go to investigate it.
Yeah. You know.
So that was all the responses we got. Thank you, everybody who wrote in. That was our last social media question. Our next social media question is, what is your favorite type of dungeon? So kind of going with that last question of, are dungeons obsolete? If they're not obsolete, what's your favorite one? Do you like a prison? Do you like a crypt? Do you like a haunted house? I'm definitely thinking crypt. Once you mentioned crypt and I was like, oh, I want to play the crypt. that one might be my favorite one.
I think I like temple ruins.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, I feel like that's that's probably among my favorite.
Sure.
Like a good sunken temple, you know, or it's like a, what I'm picturing is like a Mesoamerican pyramid.
Sure, sure.
You know, but like, you know, they're just like covered in jungle trees and moss and stuff like that.
Sure. When he said like ruined temple, like I immediately thought of in Dead by Daylight, there's like a temple stage.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yep. Yeah. You're like, yeah, running around getting chased by killers. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, there's some great dungeons out there. So hopefully we get more responses to this one than the previous one. Mm-hmm. So that'll do it for our questions. But before we close out, let's relax, let's wind down, let's take a deep breath. Let's remember those who have come before us, who have given their lives that we may have a better world to live in, as we toss another log onto the funeral pyre. Today's funeral pyre was submitted by ATGIsMLG on Reddit. And they said, "My paladin giving his life covering the retreat of his allies during a botched assault on an undead stronghold. Two party members were down, so he bought the rest enough time to grab them and live to fight another day, while he held off about a dozen zombies and ghouls long enough to let his friends escape." So yeah, a very heroic ending for this character. So I guess let's raise a glass in memory of this paladin who let his friends escape and told the enemy, "The line must be drawn." Yeah.
Clink.
It's a Star Trek First Contact reference.
Sure.
So that'll do it for today. To submit questions for us to discuss, items for the Dragon's Horde, or stories for the funeral pyre, please email us at interpartyconflict@gmail.com. For show notes, links to media mentioned on the show, and running lists of questions and magic items, go to interpartyconflict.com. Join the discussion on social media. We're on Facebook, we're on Reddit, we're on our Interparty Discord, we're on Twitter @InPartyConflict. Check those out for our weekly social media questions. Your answers might end up on the show. Find us on the podcatcher of your choice. We're on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, YouTube, Spotify, anywhere you download podcasts. Please rate, review, subscribe, or just tell a friend. If you want to support the show monetarily, we are getting rid of our top tiers on at the end of this month, but you can still donate just a little bit to help us with hosting fees. And if not, no worries. Everybody who has supported us gets a huge thank you from us because you guys are awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Jeff, tell us about FriendQuest.
FriendQuest is a YouTube channel where you can watch us play video games.
There you go. Also, head over to bit.ly/interpartyconflict. Again, I haven't quite updated that just yet, but if you go there, maybe there will be a questionnaire. Maybe there will just be a thing saying thank you for listening. But you will get 2 free printable board games courtesy of the great people over at hollandspiel.com. And our music is made by Boxcat Games from Nameless the Hackers RPG. So, Jeff, until next time.
You can't take dungeons out of D&D. It would be like taking conflict out of this podcast.
You take that back, Jeff.